This is an interview with Governor Victor G. Atiyah at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is September 10th, 1993, and this is tape 60, side one. We're wrapping up here, and I wanted to ask you some things about activities since your governorship. I noticed in one news article that after you were out of office, you went to, I believe it was on the first Portland-Tokyo flight with on Delta Airlines,
yes,
with Governor Goldschmidt. What prompted you to take that trip?
It was pretty much like a desire that I had that there'd be no interruption. That we have a change of administration, change of governor, but I wanted to make sure that in terms of our relations, in this case we went to Japan, our relations with Japan would continue uninterrupted. And because I really had made a lot of friends, and I think gained a considerable amount of credibility, I thought I'd kind of pass that on to Governor Goldschmidt, so that there wouldn't be any bump in there, any gap of time. I just wanted to kind of keep the momentum going. Mm-hmm. It was interesting, their reaction, that is in Japan. You know, here I am a Republican. I'm introducing the new governor. I told Governor Goldschmidt, you know, you take these things in order, but I said, let me go first. That would not be typical. The governor would go first. I said, let me go first, and then I will introduce you. That would be my way of passing it on. But that was my motivation, just to continue it. But the Japanese are really surprised. You know, how come you're doing this? I said, well, actually that helped me reinforce it a little bit more,
yeah,
that my interest was in continuing the relationship, and that's why I'm doing it. So they understood that part of it, and maybe it reinforced it a little.
Did you do anything else with Governor Goldschmidt during his administration?
No, perfectly willing to have done so, but he wasn't inclined to ask me.
You had mentioned a little bit about some of your activities with the Republican National Committee, and I believe that you were involved with them in 1993, just this year. You went out to, we talked a little bit about this on tape 18, you went out to it was Illinois or St. Louis?
St. Louis.
St. Louis.
Yeah.
Because Craig Berkman was?
No, I went as a national committee man, and delegates to the national convention, National Republican Party meeting. The delegates are the National Committee Man, Committee Woman, and the state chairman. Same time, Craig was running for national chairman. But I didn't go because of that. I went because I was a national committee man, a new one.
Were you supporting him?
Well, I had a lot of conversations with him. I didn't come right out. I told him it was going to be uphill. I didn't tell him. I thought he had no chance at all. I didn't put it quite that cruelly. But he had run a good campaign. It was an interesting national meeting. Interesting in the sense, and all I know is what I've heard from others, but I can imagine it, that for a long period now, at least 12 years, that would mean through Reagan and through Bush, that the National Party really didn't make a choice. The president said, this is who I want. And it was that. And so here was an opportunity to really elect the chairman. And it was interesting. There was a lot of people campaigning for it. I mean, really campaigning for it. Bo Calloway was, Haley Barbour, of course, who was elected, Spencer Abraham, Craig Berkman.
How do you campaign for something like that?
Oh, they had a hospitality place, and they each had their own way of doing it, send messages and want to meet you, and it's all within the hotel. Craig, he was put your right foot forward. I think that was his. So he had a whole bunch of Nikes. He sent every delegate one Nike. He had to go get the right shoe.
Uh-huh.
to his hospitality room. I don't know how many shoes he ended up with. I got a pair. Then finally found a pair of shoes that fit. But that was his way of doing it. There were balloons and, you know, but it was all inside the hotel, trying to line up votes and nominations and the whole thing. It was kind of interesting in that context. I became a national chairman, really, not because I really yearned to do that. As a matter of fact, I keep thinking, gosh, you know, this is not really my thing, and it really isn't my thing. It's not something I need to do. But we had quite a conservative national committee man, nice fellow. I wouldn't say OCA, but you know, he was very conservative. And I had told him earlier that, you know, I was interested, but I wouldn't run against him. And he decided he wasn't going to run again. Well, we had another conservative who would want to run, and I thought, well, we've got to really kind of balance this thing out a little. And the only one I think that could have won in those circumstances would be me, so I ran. I'm not sure how long I want to stay at that job. I'm not a particularly good national committee man. And
what do you have to do?
Oh, you're supposed to communicate with the state party, with people within the party, pay attention to what goes on in the national scene, and of course go to meetings. But it's not something I really, you know, at this stage of my life, that's not something I'm really looking forward to. But anyway, I did it for that reason, and then I went to the convention because I was a national committee man. Craig asked me to nominate him, which I did, and everybody, you know, I actually was supporting another person, not overtly. I was telling everybody they didn't know how I was going to vote, but that's normal. Sure, I said, and everybody understood he was from my state, and I'm a national committee man, and that was no real problem. If a candidate withdraws, our rules called for the person that nominates to do the withdrawing. I had told Craig earlier, that is before we went to the national meeting, that, you know, I said it's going to be an uphill fight. And what I would suggest you have plan B in mind. And plan B would be figure out who you think is going to win. And then you jump aboard that boat. Well, and then I read his statement. He's withdrawing, thanks to people. And then he says, if I could vote, I would have voted for Haley Barbour. So that was his way of jumping on the right, and he did jump on the right boat. But by that time, it was pretty clear. You know, Haley always had a larger number of the votes. We went through three ballots. And pretty clear by then, the way things were moving. That was interesting. I enjoyed it. It was just a different experience, but it's not something really I yearn to do.
What is the state of the Republican Party now, and how has it evolved over the recent
nationally
years? I'm thinking, well, nationally to some extent, but I'm actually thinking more in terms of state. The two may be intertwined, but you probably are more familiar with what's going
well,
on.
Well, yeah, it's
state.
Much different than when I first started. Uh-huh. In that you had bickering within, and you know, people had different ideas, but there was no real intimidation. In other words, I say that in the sense of OCA right wing. If you don't do this, we're going to do this. You know, constant intimidation. We didn't have any of that, so it's different in that respect.
But didn't you have you had some problems, not you personally maybe, but the more moderate Republicans had some problems back even in the 70s with very right-wing conservative chairs of the Republican Party, and I'm trying to think of the person in particular that caused so much problem. I remember you had a conference over in Bend that was very tumultuous. And
well, there was a fellow that owned a hospital in Gresham named Dirksen, and he was conservative. And there was a conservative group in there, but there wasn't that kind of organization mm-hmm. that we're facing today. I have been for quite a long period of time. They all kind of really broke apart when Huss won the election.
Right, Walter Huss.
Walter Huss, 1974.
1974, right.
And it really hasn't fully come together.
Really?
Since then. In the sense that we're all in this, we may complain, but it's not a matter of we're going to take our bogger home, or if you don't do this, we're going to do that. I mean, that kind of intimidation. I saw a lot of signs of that kind of organization. When I ran, it was the first time, I say the first time that it was not a winner-take-all in terms of going to a national convention. You know, if one candidate got 51% and the other got 49%, the one that got 51%, according to Oregon law, got all the delegates. Mm. Well, we changed the law. And under the example I just gave, if it was 51-49, one candidate would get 51% of the delegates and the other would get 49%. So this, now we are in that mode. And that, in this case, happened to be for Reagan. And I ran in our congressional district as a delegate, and you designate, obviously, that you're running on the Ford side, because you have to have a certain number of Ford people and a certain number of Reagan people. But Bob Voy came up to me and he said, "What's your slate?" I said, "What? What's your slate?" I said, "We don't have a slate." He couldn't believe it. They had a slate. They knew exactly who they were going to all go vote, you know, who they were going to vote for, regardless of who ran. They'd gotten together and say, "This is who we're going to vote for." Well, that's the kind of thing. Here I am, and I'm in the mode of how things ought to be. Person runs, and if you do, you know, do the right things, you get elected. And all of a sudden, we find them, and this group over here has a slate. He couldn't believe that we didn't have one. He thought I was keeping a secret. "No, Bob, we don't have a slate. We're just running." Well, so I guess a lot depends on how you really look at it. My vision of what the party should be is back to, fighting whatever fights we have, whatever philosophy we have, but when it's all done, you come back to what you're supposed to be doing. And a party's sole purpose for life is to elect members of their party. Those that are working in the organized Democrat Party, that's their job. That's numero uno. They like Democrats. And those of us who work in the Republican side, that's our job. We're elect Republicans. That's what we ought to be doing, not being out there with, as we've heard, on gays and lesbians and out there in abortion and all the rest. That's, you know, that's platform stuff, okay, but that's not our job. Our job is to elect Republicans.
As being a party person, and not necessarily an elected official, but a committeeman maybe, or somebody representing the party, how do you feel about the party measures that have been adopted? The
platform.
Do you feel obligated, not as an elected official because you're separate, but as a person representing the party? I know we've talked a little bit about it before.
Well, I had quite a long discussion. I'm trying to heal this thing, and I'm trying to pull people together. And so I met with the conservatives. Mm-hmm. I told Bill Witt, I said, "You get together all these people together."
This is when?
Oh, gosh, now, I don't know.
Long time ago.
No, not that long. 8-9 months ago.
Oh.
Something like that. Uh-huh. Let's sit and talk about this whole thing.
Uh-huh.
And one of them is a very well-intentioned person. I've known him for a long time. We got on the subject of abortion. He said, and you know, whether or not there's a place for it in terms of the party. And my first reaction was, and I had said before, look, you know, when you have issues like that, I can't say don't do it, but don't do it using the party vehicle to do that. Go do it. I mean, God bless you, go do whatever you want to do. That's your business. But don't use the party vehicle, so I'm trying to get the party out of it. And one fellow that I mentioned was a nice fellow, well-intentioned, not an OCA, but a conservative, religious conservative guy. He said, but the party should stand for something. We should stand for something. And I said, I don't disagree with that. But if people look at the Republican Party and say, they are against abortion and they are against gays and lesbians, then that hurts us. Now, if they say it's among the things that we stand for, fiscal conservatism, public safety, you know, all you go down through the whole list of things, and this is among them, I don't have any problem with that. But that's not the way it comes down. That's not the way the media treats it. That's not the way we're looked at. And so if it was just a part of the compendium of things that Republicans represent, okay, I can deal with that. But if it's the only thing the Republicans are, then I have a problem with it.
Well, then, I don't know if we've talked about this before, or if I've asked you, but what is a Republican? And how is a Republican different than an independent or a Democratic?
Okay, I'll give you my answer. I've got an answer.
It isn't a pat.
It's something I've, you know, chewed on for a long period of time. Basically, a Republican a Republican believes in the government closest to the people is best. A Republican believes that the minimum amount of government is best. Republicans believe that left to the devices, that the people are very smart, and that they actually can handle a lot of problems that government ought not to be dealing with. I should get, as a matter of fact, in a moment, I have something that Abraham Lincoln said that much more eloquently than I did. But that to me is what a Republican is, and I'll get it, quote it, put it on the tape. Independent, in my view, that's a cop-out. Matter of fact, today people think that they are superior if they're an independent. You know, I'm not partisan like those Democrats or Republicans. I'm independent. That's a lot of baloney, in my view. That's a total cop-out. You can be a Democrat and you can be a Republican and be independent in terms of, you know, your views, your thinking. I believe, incidentally, that two-party system, whatever names that are being used, two-party system is what one of the things that really has kept this country alive and healthy and good and moving in the right direction. When the Democrats are in, the Republicans say, hey, we can do this better, and you kind of keep the heat on the Democrats and control them. When the Republicans are in command in the majority, the same thing happens with the Democrats. We can do that better, and you kind of keep a control on the Republicans. And so you won't get the wild swings. You'll get swings, but you won't get wild swings just because everybody's looking over their shoulder. But it's a two-party system. When you get a three, four, or five party, you just look over, you look in Europe. Most governments are coalition governments. Okay, now who's in charge? Nobody's in charge. You can't say, kick out
Well, you can say kick out the coalition, can't you? I mean, isn't our country run by a sort of a coalition in the same respect that, I mean, it may not be, in when you're trying to get a bill passed and you're trying to form your program as president, whether you're Republican or Democrat, you're trying to get a certain number of Republicans and a certain number of Democrats. George Bush or Ronald Reagan, neither of them could have gotten anything through if they hadn't put some kind of a coalition of Democrats and Republicans together.
Well, that's true. And yet, it's still a Republican president or a Democrat president.
True.
Who is doing whatever it is. So it's initiative by the Republican or initiative by the Democrat. They don't sort, people don't really sort it out that how many Republicans and Democrats voted on a bill. The point really, Clark, is that, see, I can prove anything I want to prove if I take an individual. I can tell you about, moderate to conservative, basically where Republicans are, and you'd say, well, how about Bob Packwood? He's a Republican. You know what I'm trying to say. I'm giving you the generic.
Yes.
That's who the generic is. You ask me about also right. Non-Democrats. Democrats truly believe that government should solve most problems. And they're less inclined to have small government. They're more inclined to have big government. They have the general concept of what they call distribution of wealth. We're going to take your money and give it to somebody else, and we're smart enough to know how to do that. You don't, but we do. Well, I may have covered it in the tape, but I consider those kinds of people what I consider elitists. They say, we're smarter than you are. And they are pre-1787, prior to our Constitution and our government. They go back to when the king was ruling, because it says, don't worry about it, I'm going to take care of you. So folks out there, don't worry about what's going on, I'm going to take care of it. What I say is what's going to happen. And I do remember telling you that way back Jefferson, I was paraphrasing what I thought our system was all about. Hey, I wonder if people can run government. That's my paraphrase of what our system is. And the Democrats go in the opposite direction of that. We don't want people fiddling around with this government. We're smarter. I get very upset about it. Now, having told you what I have, mainly the idea of Republicans want the people to solve more of the problems and the Democrats want the government to solve most of the problems. That is not a disputed. I've had that in good, friendly discussion with Democrats, and they would agree with what I just said to you. In other words, I'm not making up my own. But when I look at it, the fiscal conservatism does work into the Republican side. Fiscal conservatism does not on the Democrat side. We'll go get it somewhere. Deficits are not bad, according to most Democrats. Deficits are real bad, according to most Republicans. But at any rate, you push that button, I'll go get Lincoln's quote, and I'll be right back.
Okay.
I was talking about this quote of Lincoln. He really could say it. You cannot bring about prosperity by discouraging thrift. You cannot strengthen the weak by weakening the strong. You cannot help the wage earner by pulling down the wage payer. You cannot further the brotherhood of man by encouraging class hatred. You cannot help the poor by discouraging the rich. You cannot establish sound security on borrowed money. You cannot keep out of trouble by spending more than you earn. You cannot build character and courage by taking away man's initiative and independence. You cannot help men permanently by doing for them what they could and should do for themselves. Now that sort of capsulizes, I would say that would be the tune for most Republicans. That would not be the tune for most Democrats. They may say that it is, but I look at actions. What have they done? Not what you're telling me. Oh, I believe in that. No. If you do, then how come you're doing all of these things that you are? Anyway, when you ask that question, basically, I've said many times in my speeches, I'm a Republican, not because my dad was a Republican, which he was. And I didn't shoehorn myself into, in other words, I'm comfortable in the Republican Party and the general attitude of Republicans. I would be uncomfortable. My philosophy does not permit me to be a Democrat. Mm. So it's not a matter of, of I inherited it. It's just something that I believe in, and this Republican Party, although they do a lot of things I don't like, but this thing called a Republican Party, I'm closer to this. I could not fit in the Democrat side.
Okay, well,
this is your copy for whatever it's
worth. Oh, well, thank you. I'll keep that up on my desk. Well, has the Republican Party in Oregon, at least, is it cornered by or controlled by what you would consider to be the right wing?
Not controlled, no, but intimidated by. Maybe not doing all the things they would normally do. Not being the umbrella that they should be.
What does right wing mean to you?
To me?
Yes.
Right wing, I would put with far right Republican, far right conservative, excuse me. That's all of that means are way over on the right side of society. That's not where Americans are. That's not where Oregonians are. The same thing as the left wing, far out left, and that's not where Oregonians are either. You want maybe more definition than that. Usually those people, I'm talking about on both ends now, think they're smarter than anybody else, think that they have a quarter on conscience, think the rest of us in the middle are compromising, giving up on principle, all those kinds of things. And that's what I'm saying, it fits on both ends.
What role should religion play in politics?
What?
Religion, or religious values, mores?
Well, values are one that you kind of bring with you. But whether it's gospel or Episcopalian or Catholic or whatever, should have nothing to do with the party. It was very carefully chosen, the separation of church and state, and I believe that's the correct thing to do. But it was more of a protection for the church than it was for the state. This separation wasn't a matter of saving the state, it was saving the church, is what it was for.
I think people probably view it the other way around.
Yeah, but basically that's what it was for. And I believe that. I believe it should stay out of there. But, you know, I don't walk into a room and then turn off something. I'm who I am. And they are who they are. And they believe it. But, you know, I feel sorry for them. Now, again, I'm on both sides. Mm-hmm. Liberal and way out conservative. Really feel sorry for them. They must lead on a most unhappy life. You know, their teeth are gritting all the time. They're so intense all the time. God, what a terrible way to live. Yeah, you know, just that they're so certain that they're absolutely correct and everybody else is wrong. And they're very, very intense, angry people all the time. I feel sorry for them.
The Oregon Citizens Alliance has talked about maturing into either a political party or with its own candidates, or to have a broad-based political profile throughout the state.
They'll never become anything but intimidators. That's all. And if they ever plan that they're going to elect, they might elect a legislator or two or three out of 90. They'll never elect a statewide official.
But they can keep certain statewide officials from being elected, like you've talked about with Dave Bromeyer.
That's right. We could do that.
So their power is real.